Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen. Thank you for joining me to listen to KHOI's celebration of Memorial Day. Many of the towns in our listening area have Memorial Day parades this morning, honoring the men and women who died while serving in the U.S. military. Originally known as Decoration Day, this holiday, the last Monday of May, began its celebration nationally in the years following the Civil War and only became an official federal holiday in 1971. While it is important to honor the war dead on Memorial Day, the broader purpose of Decoration Day was a time to visit cemeteries and decorate the graves of loved ones. And in the last Monday of May, it was a time when there were plenty of garden flowers to carry out and put on the graves. It was then that communities came together to visit local cemeteries where family members were buried. Dennis Hart is starting us off with a summary of the news from the pages of regional papers. Hi, Dennis. Thank you for being with us on this holiday.
Iowa leaders react to the mass shooting at a Texas elementary school, and the Iowa State Legislature finally gets to adjournment day. Those stories topped the news around the state last week. First, the mass shooting. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds ordered flags to be flown at half staff around the state through this past Saturday. This after a teenage gunman killed 19 students and two teachers at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas on Tuesday. The governor said in her words, "My heart breaks for all those affected by the tragic and senseless shooting. No parent or child should ever have to face this unimaginable tragedy." The governor called for more mental health programs, law enforcement training, and school security measures. She said there's not one single answer to prevent mass shootings, and that in her words, there is evil that exists in the world. Iowa U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley called the shooting sickening and heartbreaking. He said schools should be a safe place for students and educators. Iowa Congresswoman Cindy Axne called for Congress to finally act to prevent school shootings. State Senate Democratic Minority Leader Zach Walls addressed Republicans in the state legislature, saying in his words, "I implore you, we can work together to protect our communities from senseless gun violence without infringing on the rights of law-abiding gun owners and sportsmen." Now, for the state legislature. It adjourned its 2022 session early last Wednesday morning, more than 1 month after its target end date. The final legislative day saw lawmakers approve an $8.2 billion budget for the state, starting July 1st. On that last day, lawmakers voted to eliminate the March 1st deadline for students to open enroll in other school districts, meaning they can do so any time throughout the year as long as the new district accepts. The legislature also voted to ban private money from being used to help run elections. And in a last-minute compromise, the State House and Senate agreed to legislation to regulate pharmacy benefit managers who serve as middlemen between insurance companies and drug makers. All of this took place after State House Speaker Pat Grassley had announced that lawmakers would not pass Governor Reynolds' signature proposal to give 10,000 families public money for private school scholarships. Grassley told reporters in his words, "It doesn't look like we're going to be able to put the votes together in the House this year to pass that." It was a major setback for the governor, who had made that issue one of her top priorities for this year. And that was the big issue that had stopped action for weeks at the legislature. After Grassley's announcement, the legislature quickly voted for a 2-year moratorium on new casino licenses as part of a bigger gaming bill. The legislation would cap the number of state-issued licenses at the current number of 19 starting this Wednesday. It would expire in June 2024. The bill would keep new casinos from eating into existing casinos' revenue. The bill received support and opposition from members of both political parties. The legislature also voted to change Iowa's decade-old bottle and can redemption program. The bill will modernize the redemption program by allowing mobile redemption systems and by increasing the funding for bottle and can redemption centers. The bill lets grocery stores, gas stations, and convenience stores opt out of the program. It would triple the 1-cent handling fee for redemption centers to 3 cents. During this year's legislative session, the governor got most of what she wanted, but not everything. Her biggest win was a 3.9% flat tax lawmakers approved. That law also eliminates state income taxes on retirement income, gives some tax breaks to retiring farmers, and cuts the state's corporate tax rate. The governor also got to sign into law a bill banning transgender girls and women from competing in athletics with the gender they identify with. She called that a fairness issue. She also won in her plan to cut jobless benefits by 10 weeks in Iowa and require workers to take lower-paying jobs or risk losing their benefits. And she won in her plan to require gas stations to sell fuel with 15% ethanol. As I said earlier, she lost in her effort to give 10,000 families taxpayer-funded scholarships to pay private school or at-home school expenses. And she failed in her effort to require school districts to post their curriculum and lists of library books online as a means of increasing transparency around what's being taught in schools. And she lost in her effort to pass anti-racial profiling laws that would affect police departments. Meanwhile, last week, the governor signed a bill that allows a police agency to share a driver's license photo when someone is missing, or when that person is suspected of being involved when a child is missing. Previously, the State Department of Transportation could share a driver's license photo with police, but the database could only share a photo if the police agency in charge of the case let the State Department of Public Safety do so. Also last week, Iowa Senate Democrats blocked four of Governor Reynolds' nominees for a statewide commission that helps pick state Supreme Court justices. Democrats said the governor had violated the law by naming nearly all Republicans to the panel. The commission selects finalists for positions on the state Supreme Court and Court of Appeals, then sends the names of the finalists to the governor, who chooses one of them. The four nominees can still serve for 60 days, and that will give them enough time to select three finalists to replace state Supreme Court Justice Brent Appel, who is retiring in July. And one more note from the state legislature last week. On the same day that the teenage gunman killed 21 people at a Texas elementary school, lawmakers in Iowa passed a bill letting deer hunters use semi-automatic rifles during a newly created antlerless season in January. The measure was given final approval by the state house and was designed to help control the deer population and respond to complaints that excess deer eat corn and are a hazard to drivers. Deer hunting with AR-15 rifles is allowed in other states. Now that the legislative session is over, Iowa lawmakers will hit the campaign trail in advance of next Tuesday's June 7th primary, where an unusually high number of them face challengers because of the once-in-a-lifetime redistricting process. Education is the motivating factor in many Republican races, and the governor has already endorsed the primary opponent of one House Republican who opposed her scholarship proposal. In other news last week, word that Iowa's coronavirus infection rate went up slightly, when it averaged about 566 new confirmed cases each day. That was a 3% hike over the previous week, and the smallest gain in more than a month. The state reported 3,960 new cases, not including infections confirmed by at-home testing, because the state does not track those. The number of people hospitalized because of the virus in Iowa went down last week to 139, compared to 145 the week before. And the health department reported 16 new deaths caused by the virus, bringing the state's death toll to 9,588 since the pandemic started. Also last week, the U.S. Supreme Court decided unanimously with a former Iowa worker who had sued her employer, a Taco Bell franchisee, for wage theft. Robin Morgan's 2018 lawsuit against Michigan-based Sundance Incorporated alleged that she and other workers at the Osceola Taco Bell had been told to work off the clock and that they had been cheated out of overtime. The suit had been tied up for years over the question of whether the company waited too long to invoke a contract clause mandating private arbitration of her claim. The high court decided that lower courts had wrongly ruled in Sundance's favor and clarifies how courts nationwide should interpret and enforce similar arbitration clauses. There was also word that an eastern Iowa man had sued his employer for religious discrimination, alleging that he was fired after stating the company's support of gay pride was an abomination to God. 63-year-old Daniel Snyder of Riverdale is suing Arconic, formerly known as Alcoa. The lawsuit says Snyder was suspended and then fired for violating the company's diversity policy. And still on the court beat, a report last week about a lawsuit that had been filed against the state of Iowa and five Iowa State Patrol troopers that alleges the officers violated the rights of about 150 LGBTQ students and their chaperones when they evicted them from the state capitol earlier this year. The group was there for a student day at the capitol organized by the advocacy group Iowa Safe Schools to tour the building and speak with lawmakers. Their visit was cut short after a number of transgender and non-binary students tried to use the restrooms. The state patrol says Capitol security officers asked the students to stop using the men's restroom and use a gender-neutral restroom instead. When they refused, they were asked to leave the Capitol. And finally last week, word that a half-century-old anchor of West Des Moines University Avenue is in foreclosure. It's Valley West Mall, whose owners have not made loan payments for the past year. U.S. Bank is asking a court to appoint a receiver to take control of the mall property and to manage rent and loan payments, as well as order the mall to pay the rest of its original $41 million loan. The mall's struggles started years ago and were compounded by the 2018 closure of the Yonkers department store and by the building-wide closure in 2020 when the pandemic got to Iowa. For now, the mall remains open for business. And that is your summary of the week's important news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, thanking you so much for spending part of your Memorial Day holiday with me and asking you to do it again tonight at 7 when Laura Bellin and I will be here live to talk about and analyze everything that went on in the state legislature last week as lawmakers rushed to adjournment. We'll also try to make sense of what it all means for all of us. Hope you can be here tonight at 7 and then come back here to Local Talk this Friday morning when I'll endeavor to report on what makes news in Ames. In the meantime, I hope you have a meaningful Memorial Day and a great week.
While there will be a variety of Memorial Day celebrations, the Ames Citywide Parade and Program is being organized by the Ames Patriotic Council. starting at the Ames City Hall at 10:30 a.m. on Memorial on Monday, May 30th. Anyone, especially any veteran, wishing to walk or ride in the parade is welcome. Parade participants should begin gathering at 10 a.m. in the parking lot on the west side of City Hall, 510 Clark, and along Fifth Street on the south side of City Hall. The parade will step off at 10:30 a.m. Due to the solemn nature of the holiday, the Patriotic Council asks that parade participants refrain from distributing candy or promotional literature along the parade route. The program at the cemetery begins at 11 a.m. with Ames Mayor John Hala offering a welcome from the city and American Legion Post Number 37, Commander Jay Sisko, greeting the audience on behalf of the Legion. The program will be introduced by Tim Garten, President of the Ames Patriotic Council. A color guard from the Des Moines Composite Squadron of the Civil Air Patrol will present the colors. The Ames Municipal Band, under the direction of Mike Golimo, will play patriotic music. Our featured singer will be Jim DeHoot. A list of the names of local veterans interred since last Memorial Day will be read, followed by a salute from the American Legion Honor Guard. Our featured speaker will be Army Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Harvey, retired, and we are fortunate that he is here with us to tell us something about his service.
I'm honored that they invited me, and I look forward to reflecting on my own experiences and sharing some thoughts about the importance of Memorial Day and remembering those who gave their all for our country and our communities, and then also the other people that we should remember at the same time as we remember them. My background is I served over 25 years as a Army Reserve officer. During that time, I spent over 6 years on active duty in various assignments. I feel that one of the most important assignments that I served in was when I deployed to Afghanistan for 13 months in 2004 and 2005. I also served in different staff positions at the Pentagon with the Defense Contract Management Agency. I commanded the 445th Transportation Company in Waterloo, Iowa. Prior to that, I had served several years with the 1st of the 410th Infantry Battalion over in Iowa City, Iowa. I've had a long connection to Iowa and to Ames in terms of my
commendations, Bronze Star, Combat Infantryman Badge, and Joint Meritorious Unit Award.
Yes, I received those during my time for my service in Afghanistan.
So. And it mentions, for example, South Korea, Canada.
Yeah. When I was assigned to the 19th Theater Support Command that had a headquarters unit in Des Moines, Iowa, it was then that I went to South Korea as part of that assignment, and then I went to Canada as part of working with the Defense Contract Management Agency. They had an office in Canada that I served with for a short period of time. So,
but you started out when you were a student, and tell us a little about your undergraduate and graduate work.
My father, who had done Army JROTC, the high school version of ROTC, he had done it when he went through high school, and he thought it was a good thing for each of his sons to consider doing. I was the middle son, and I'm the one who ended up doing it. In when I first went to high school in ninth grade, I went to Cass Technical High School for ninth grade in Detroit, Michigan, and I enjoyed it, and I began even then to feel like it may be a calling or have a place in my life for the rest of my life. And then I transferred schools. A new school opened up in Detroit, Renaissance High School, and I was a part of the first graduating class from Renaissance High School. So when I transferred to Renaissance High School in 10th grade, they didn't have JROTC. And six months later, they added it to the program. So I immediately joined and eventually rose to the rank of being the first cadet battalion commander for the Phoenix Battalion at Renaissance High School in Detroit. And then I went off to Michigan State and immediately joined ROTC. I received my commission as a second lieutenant in the infantry. After I left Michigan State, that's when my wife and I moved to Iowa the first time, continued my service and some education, and then worked. I actually had an opportunity to work for a couple of years at the Iowa Army Ammunition Plant down in Middletown, Iowa, outside of Burlington. And then I just continued my service from there. And so currently, when you talk about my educational pursuits, another thing that I've spent many, many days and many hours pursuing a PhD in industrial and agricultural technology there at Iowa State University. And so I've just grown to love Ames. Even one day when I finish school, I hope to continue to be able to find something where I can contribute to the Ames community.
Well, it's interesting that your most recent work actually is related to agriculture.
I can share why. When I was growing up in Detroit, I wanted to be a farmer, and that was a bit strange for a kid growing up in the city. Then when I went to Michigan State, I realized that was not feasible, because at the time, coming out of the farm crisis, I didn't see a path to being able to pursue that without having land in the family. And so I ended up getting a degree in the College of Ag and Natural Resources at Michigan State University. And so it's always been a passion of mine to do something related to agriculture. And so when I had the opportunity to pursue this degree at Iowa State, I felt like it was a kind of a coming home of sorts. And for me, again, growing up in Detroit, the idea of just studying and walking and being on the campus that George Washington Carver, who was a childhood hero of mine, continues to be a hero of mine. It's just been wonderful. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I currently work for the United States Department of Agriculture out of the Des Moines office. And so it's just, agriculture has also been one of those things entwined in my journey, along with the Army and the military from a very long time ago.
Well, I noticed that particularly since I've been trying to get hold of you as you hold down the fort of Fort Des Moines Museum and Educational Center, and I guess you're planning a program there. The next, either tomorrow or the next few days. So would you tell us something about that institution?
Well, we aren't planning a program in the next few days. What we did commit to do is being open today for those who want to come by and we're this Memorial Day weekend. I serve as the president of the board and have for several years of Fort Des Moines Museum and Education Center, and its historical significance is it's the first place in the country where black officers were trained for the United States Army during World War I. And then, unfortunately, because there was a World War II, 25 years later, it became the first place that women trained for the United States Army. The Army ended up having several other training sites to support the World War II training effort for the Women's Army Corps. But Fort Des Moines was the first place that a group of women trained and graduated and ended up serving in the United States Army. And so I'm actually volunteering to keep the museum open today. Another volunteer was here earlier, and I have the afternoon shift. And so we're currently an all-volunteer organization, and we just continue to want to preserve, protect, and promote that history and the history of all those who have served in the military that in some way have an attachment to Fort Des Moines. We work to preserve and educate people about that history.
Well, I should think, I'm not quite sure how many World War I veterans are still around, but that must be quite interesting to meet the veterans who come through.
Oh, yes. And though some of the World War I veterans, most are not around, and there are very few World War II veterans that continue to be with us. But it's wonderful to be able to meet their children and their grandchildren as they come to visit where someone important in their lives who trained here at Fort Des Moines, you know, 100 years ago, over 100 years ago, or over 75 years ago for the women. And it's fascinating. I mean, I've had the pleasure of meeting people who, as a small child, they lived here on the grounds of Fort Des Moines. And they remember some of the buildings, and it's good to be a part of preserving a significant piece of our American history, and it's rewarding to continue to be able to serve in some capacity, supporting the Army and the Army ideals and the sense of duty, honor, and country that's been with me since high school.
And if people want to hear you, what time is the program begin at the cemetery?
The program will begin at 11 o'clock, but it's preceded by a parade. And so people should look to see if they would like to participate in that. Joining us for the program.
Okay, so they can. But with the parade will start at the City Hall. Is that right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And people will physically march out to the cemetery, right?
Yes. Yes.
Although I said that there also would be cars for. How is that going to work?
I understand that there will be alternative forms of transportation for those who wish to move from the one area to the cemetery other than by walking.
And so are you, I presume you would be like the campaign marshal or something?
Oh, no, I
can cut that out. You want to?
Yeah, because my understanding is that I would be a participant like many other fine citizens who would join us for the event on Memorial Day.
And actually, this is a very accessible event because although it looks like we're going to have lovely weather, if there is rain, they would have this ceremony at the City Hall Auditorium.
Correct.
I understand. Yes. And also, it's going to be televised, so people can see it online, right?
Yes. If people are unable to join us in person, they can join us virtually.
I can read off the. They can join at www.facebook.com Ames Patriotic Council events/events or www.amespatrioticcouncil.org.
Yes, both those ways you can get to the links to watch the ceremony over the computer.
And it is a very serious parade, and unlike most parades where you have candidates handing out flyers and throwing candy to kids, that is not part of this ceremony.
No. In fact, this parade and this ceremony is just a wonderful event that reflects reflects citizens coming together who appreciate the seriousness of the sacrifice that men and women in uniform made for our country and their communities. And so it's more solemn than most parades, and it's about remembering and then honoring and of course we celebrate their service and we appreciate all that their sacrifice allows us to do, but it's an opportunity to gather with others who want to remember, to always remember those in uniform who gave their all.
Well, thank you so much for being part of this with the address, which I'm sure will inspire a lot of the people who get to see it.
Well, I'm thankful for the opportunity to do it. I'm thankful for the opportunity to remember those who sacrificed, and I thank you for the opportunity to honor them, to honor their families and loved ones, and to honor those who are potentially in that situation this very day or could be in this situation in the future. I just think it's important for all of us to remember those who've gone before us and to honor those who are with us now and who could serve in the future but could also one day be in a situation where they may give it all for us.
Thank you very much for what you're doing and for talking to me about it.
Thank you.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to our Memorial Day special. We've just been speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Harvey, who will be delivering the main address at the ceremony, which will be at the cemetery at 11 o'clock. In case of inclement weather, the ceremony will be moved into the City Hall Auditorium. American Legion Post number 37 will provide lunch at the post at 225 Main Street in Ames. A salute to the dead will be given at the Ontario Cemetery at 1 p.m. and at the Story Memorial Gardens at 1:30 p.m. For those not able to attend in person, The program will also be viewable online at www.facebook.com/AmesPatrioticCouncil/events and at www.AmesPatrioticCouncil.org. Day has many aspects, and in Ames, one of them is the faculty cemetery on the Iowa State campus, where professors and their families are buried. The university retirees also have a memorial celebration on the last week in May, and the song you just heard was written by Charles Klinker for that event. He composed the words, but I believe those of you familiar with ISU will recognize the melody as The Bells of Iowa State. Paul Wearson has joined us with some history of the Des Moines Museum, which is where Colonel Harvey was before he joined us for his interview. In his retirement, Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Harvey is serving as president of the board of that museum. When we hear what Paul has to say, I think some of the people listening will decide to check it out the next time they're in Des Moines, and that it might not survive. Have you ever been to the Fort Des Moines Museum?
Yeah, the Fort Des Moines Museum is where black officers were trained, I think in the First World War, 1917 era. And that's been remarkably well preserved and restored. And it's very beautiful there, too. The chapel is preserved in another building, you know. But someone spent some real money to restore and refurbish that building that really honors the officer corps who were trained in a, it was all the black regiment. They were training officers. So that was rather forward-looking. And, of course, that was before the integration of the armed services under Harry Truman in 1948. So all the black officers trained at Fort Des Moines were destined for black units. You know, it was still a segregated army. The other thing is that at World War II, that was the large WAC attachment. I think there were 5,000 women at Fort Des Moines at one time. And I talked to Babe Bisignano, who ran a restaurant, Babe's Restaurant, and he remembers the wild times of World War II when pilots doing an overflight would suddenly develop engine trouble over Des Moines because there were so many women at Fort Des Moines. He used to laugh about that. And basically, Babe's Restaurant was born during that era and was an institution way up into the 1980s, you know, so Des Moines was a pretty lively place during the war just because of the WAC detachment. I think that was almost the main training center for WACs. And so you could say that Fort Des Moines was a place that the Army and the military experimented with new ideas, both the Black Officer Training Corps and the large detachment of WAC training centers that exist in the country. The largest one, I believe, was at Fort Des Moines. And it was still running when I took my physical under the draft. That's where the clearinghouse was for all the inductees for the Vietnam era, as late as that time. It was still the induction center for Fort Des Moines. And now it's closed. You know, there's not much activity at Fort Des Moines. And a lot of that has been developed, and there's always been a huge parade ground. And when Ronald Reagan was on the staff at WHO, he used to enjoy riding with the cavalry troops there. In fact, I think he had a major injury when he was a horse bolted into a feeding trough and gave him sort of a permanent injury. And so he took great delight in hanging out with the cavalry at the post in Fort Des Moines. Probably, that was probably in the 1930s, you know. So it's been an active military establishment for a long time, and probably most noteworthy, as I said, as a training center for black officers and the huge WAC detachment during World War II.
Well, Paul, I'm glad you're here with me because we have some more cemeteries to explore, and I think you know where they are.
I know there must be in all the towns around here, and I know there are two in Story City. Can you fill me in on that?
Yeah, I was honored twice. I've spoken and given the main address twice at Story City Cemetery, and that ceremony is always held on Memorial Day. But there's a parade that winds through the streets and ends up at the cemetery with a high school band. They always have a speaker, as I had then. And then they have a competition in the middle school, eighth grade. Everyone memorizes the Gettysburg Address, who wants to compete. And those who do best recite Lincoln's Gettysburg Address at the Roland Story City Cemetery and at the Roland Cemetery. Now, the Roland Cemetery is a beautiful cemetery with a whole avenue of flags, and they have a speaker, and they have a ceremony with the middle school band from Roland Story, and they march to the cemetery. And so both ceremonies feature a parade and a address by a guest speaker, recitation of the Gettysburg Address and the firing squad and all the honors that are done with taps. Someone from the high school band and the middle school band plays taps with the echo. And it's a full-fledged ceremony and very beautiful. And, you know, it's really a moving thing. And people get, well, it's very well attended, both at Roland and Story City. And I'm sure that all the surrounding communities at in Story County have a version of that. And I think that it's really nice that that's done, and really very good that the tradition did not die, because I've never seen anyone drop the ball. You know, even if there's rain and inclement weather, it moves to an indoor ceremony. So I think that we're secure that there will always be a big Memorial Day celebration at Story City at Roland.
Well, you reminded me of something that I need to include in my description of the parade, and that is, if it rains, the program will be in the City Hall. It doesn't look like it's going to rain tomorrow.
Well, I think we're going to have good weather, probably a little high wind, but I think probably this is such a tradition that you may move it, because the weather has to be pretty bad to move indoors, because it's such a beautiful setting at both cemeteries, you know. And I'm sure that's true of all the cemeteries. And, you know, there's really a guarantee in Iowa that all these cemeteries are preserved, and there's contracts let by farmers or people who own nearby property to keep it mowed, you know, and well tended. And so there's a pioneer cemetery near the Riverside Bible Camp where my family is, some of my family are buried. My grandmother was the last burial there in 1948. And when you visit there, you have to cross a river to get through. You have to drive across a sort of a creek or a river. And there's an adjacent farm field, and the farmer keeps that looking just as good as the municipal cemetery. It's beautiful and well-kept and well-manicured, and it's really thoughtful that throughout the state, some contractual arrangement is made by neighbors to keep it mowed and well-kept so that nothing falls into complete total disrepair in this state. Very good that there's perpetual care, no matter how remote the Pioneer Cemetery might be.
But one of the things that I learned when we did our program on the Bloomington Cemetery was that to be an official Pioneer Cemetery, you can't have had a burial there for as much as 80 years. And then it's officially a Pioneer's cemetery. But I noticed that in Ames, when they were listing the cemeteries, I remember when I lived in Moingona, their situation is that the original road was down by the river. And when they put in New 30 and other roads, they moved the road into Moingona several miles up the hill. And now, when you drive into Moingona, you pass a very beautiful metal archway that looks into the cemetery. But of course, and this is very recent. I was there at Memorial Day, and it was clear there were new flowers, and there were, I think there maybe even had been a recent burial there. But of course, down at the bottom of the hill, they have graves that go back to Kate Shelley's time, you know, over 100 years. And so that would be technically a pioneer cemetery, but it's part of this evolving cemetery that's well cared for, and that is the Moingona Cemetery.
Well, that just points to the fact that I think there's a law, too, in Iowa that guarantees some sort of care in perpetuity. And I think the veterans organizations are very good to keep track of where veterans are buried so that flags are installed in very remote cemeteries sometimes. So it's really a tribute to the fact that, you know, we remember these veterans in a special way. And I think that the main thing here is that, you know, not only veterans are remembered, but look at all the people. I was at the cemetery today, and everyone's working and installing flowers and remembrances. And by the way, there's another cemetery that's visible by the interstate on Interstate 35 called Sheffield Cemetery. And I think the first burials there were pioneers who, a family of pioneers who died in a prairie fire. They're the earliest burials there. And the Sheffield Cemetery is a nice, quiet place, except for the roar of the interstate. And burials are still happening there. In fact, I'm going to a burial there later this month. So basically, that's still a cemetery that's being used. But if you look to your right, when you're northbound, you'll see a cemetery just south of the Story City exit. So that's a pioneer cemetery that's still active. And a very beautiful place.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm in your host, Susan Franzen. Other voices you heard were Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Harvey and Paul Wearson. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Stars and Stripes Forever, played by the President's Marine Band, and Ring the Bells. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just hit the yellow Donate, Become a Member button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI a